94.7 The Pulse.
We're having a bit of a sing-along to that track there here at Deakin Downtown. Leo and our guest, Ram, who we had on the program yesterday, yes. But back by popular demand.
Yes. Now, Ram, you suggested it might be the comedy hour, the afternoon comedy hour when you come back on, but we'll have to get some real comedians to replace Mitchell and myself, as I'm sure you do a good job.
Ram, always aiming to please.
Always aiming to please. What have you made of today's
Today's been more speeches. Of a focus on Australian media and its landscape here versus yesterday with a lot of countries represented. So what have been some of the takeaways?
I think a lot of very interesting presentations today morning. I think a lot of theoretical frameworks to look at and analyze how Australian community radio works. And I think an interesting contrast for me has been the kind of tensions between the regional stations. I think
yes.
Leo articulated it very well when he was talking. And it's something else that I spoke with Ken Thompson at Gippsland as well, which is the fact that a lot of the regional stations have a peculiar set of problems that are all their own and sometimes don't, as Ken put it, have the luxury of actually taking stances on various issues because they feel uncomfortable doing that and want to take a more balanced approach, whereas some of the metro stations can be more radical in their approach, take stronger political stances on a lot of issues. I'm not sure how entirely true that is across the entire spectrum of community radios in India and in Australia, but I suspect the metro stations sometimes have it a little easier in terms of being able to reach out to a more diverse audience in one go.
Yeah, and they have a bigger listenership in general in terms of just due to population, I suppose. And I suppose that's one thing I was trying to highlight was that there's issues within when we look at a sector of, you know, Australian broadcasting and community radio, there are individual problems within that we need to address, as well as instead of painting a big picture of this is all good and this is how we do it in Australia and maybe you can do the same thing. We still have to recognise the issues that go on in regional areas in Australia as opposed to metro areas.
And even I think the role of advocacy for stations in regional areas is different. So the things that stations might be fighting for on behalf of the community in regional areas might be different to in metro areas. So, for example, part of Geelong, compared to other areas in Australia, has a bit of a lack of funding coming to it because the seat never really changes. It's a safe seat at both state and federal level, and therefore there's no real incentive for the political parties to spend money there. So some of the role is trying to get people in those suburbs in Geelong to speak out about what they want and what they need. That's a little bit different to the issues that they're perhaps grappling with at the radio stations in Fitzroy and in the city of Melbourne, would you say, Leo?
Yeah, definitely. And as we mentioned before with John, it's important in regional areas particularly that people have good relationships with their politicians, which for you, Ram, sounds a bit difficult.
Yeah.
Not because you have problems with politicians all the time, but I mean in areas where we're very fortunate that we are encased in probably one seat, one federal seat, so our local member is very responsive to us and to all the different community needs that we have and represent on our broadcasting grid. But for someone in India where it's a bit more difficult to get access to politicians, it's kind of a bit null and void, that situation, isn't it?
I would say it's difficult to get access to politicians per se. I think a lot of the civil society organizations which are running community radios are fairly well set with the local politicians in their areas and can access them fairly frequently. The real question is whether the politician is actually willing to interact at community level, because he or she is willing to interact with the NGO, which is actually hosting the radio station, but may not be so comfortable answering questions directly from his constituents. So I think they feel that interacting with the NGO means there's always a symbiosis of some kind where everyone's scratching everyone's back. Mm. So they feel more comfortable engaging at that level than at the grassroots level, really. So I can understand that the individual at the grassroots will have a lot of trouble physically getting a meeting with the local member of parliament or the local member of legislative assembly as it is.
So our local MP is the deputy leader of the opposition in Australia now, and he actually came into the station for the forum, and we didn't know what the questions were going to be. There were some questions that were a bit out there, weren't there, Leah?
Yes.
And he's actually coming back on Tuesday to answer some more questions. So it's nice to know that the Australian deputy leader of the opposition will still come into our station to answer questions.
But at a larger level, there's now a general malaise, I think, in the Indian media, especially in journalism in India, where there's an attempt by especially many of the commercial media interests, which actually control the larger news channels as well, to actually play softball with the politicians and actually take a very kowtowing approach to them. Yeah. And that's become really endemic now. And in some ways, it's an abdication of their responsibility as media persons, because they have stopped questioning policies. They have stopped questioning actions. They have stopped questioning perspectives. They're only asking softball questions like, how do you eat your mangoes?
And which cricket team do you root for?
And things like that. So that's very problematic by all of us, because we think there are important questions to be asked. And
yes, the same guy went on the commercial media outlets for Geelong, and they asked him about what football team do you go for, and can you tell us about your collection of 400 snow globes? You know, those globes with the snow. Yeah. He collects those. They were more interested in talking to him about that than they were about policy.
That's entertainment, folks. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Well, it is the comedy hour.
It is the comedy hour. But let me tell you an interesting realization that we have had coming to this meeting specifically. A lot of our impression of community radio in Australia, especially when viewed externally through the lens of international meetings where people from Australia have participated along with us, has that it's a fairly unified community radio sector, and that there's a strong central association of community radios in the CBAA, and that there are no real disparities between the stations. But this has been an eye-opener. We are seeing a lot of different kinds of tensions within the community radio sector, and some of the challenges in terms of an inequitable distribution of funding or access to funding, and even things like, for example, this migration of volunteers that you're seeing between the regional stations and the urban stations. That's very interesting for us, because I think it's a more nuanced understanding of Australian community radio that we're getting now.
Yeah.
And some of those problems have parallels in our country as well. Many of the rural stations, yes, do end up training people who actually migrate into the commercial media process, because they have the basic skills and can do some stuff there. And that has been a continuing problem for us as well. And it's been difficult to solve, because in the end, people need jobs, people need employment, and in our media sector, well, people get paid at least.
Yeah.
So it does seem to be a larger issue that we need to talk more about. We'd like to hear more solutions at your end. I'm sure there may be some things from India which we could share in terms of the kind of strategies that community radios are adopting there.
Yes, it's very interesting when you go to some of those meetings, the CBAA or the CBF meetings or even the NMBC meetings, and the divisive nature of people speaking about things. But as you said before, when it comes to the actual sector, everyone's united in the same thing, that we still want to continue on the way we're going. So there is a united focus despite having all the implications and complications that go with it.
I was also struck, Leo, by something you said earlier today in one of the sessions, which was that a lot of people might actually want to leave the regional station for a metro station because everybody in the community knows them and they don't feel as free expressing their opinions because their own communities may be too conservative. That's a very interesting thought for me, because at one level I understand the need for anonymity in terms of being able to speak out. Especially if your community is fairly conservative. But that's not the impression we have of Australia externally.
Yep.
So that's a bit of a learning experience for us.
Yeah. Especially in smaller communities. So, for example, if someone's doing a program of a newly emerged community like the Karen or someone like that, there's only maybe 500 members or 600 members in the actual town. So it's very easy to work out who's who. And I was saying before to Pinky and Mira just off air about how we had a very strange request from some people in Nauru, which is a very small island in the Pacific. And they said it was too small to have any valuable radio in Nauru because everyone knows who you're talking about and who you're talking to. So they wanted to send us the details and get us to read it out for them. So they're having their own pirate radio via Australia almost, because they felt they were too government controlled and they felt that everyone knew everyone. So it was very hard to actually get a message out or an alternative opinion out without being bombarded when you live in Nauru. So I think it's an issue that happens, and people move to the metro areas because there are much larger communities. So if you're moving from a community of 500 to a community of, you know, 100,000 maybe in Melbourne, that's a very big step up, and your anonymity becomes very...
anonymous.
Yeah, you're anonymous. And it's a very, I suppose, for a lot of people, particularly youth, where you have this view, and a friend of mine who said, you know, you come from Italy with his parents came 40 years ago, and he says they still think of Italy as being like it was 40 years ago, and you go to Italy and it's nothing like it was 40 years ago, but they still have a view because they've left that place. And he says they're very conservative and they're very thing. So do not offend them and the older listenership who are probably at that same level, it's very difficult for young people. So that's why they want to move on into another.
No, that's a good point. I think those of us who work in participatory communication and participatory development, I think at some level we've been guilty of romanticizing this idea of community and openness and free speech. Because I don't think we end up recognizing some of the social dynamics that are involved properly.
Exactly.
And in our blinkered vision, we feel that if you offer an opportunity for everyone to just speak up and express themselves, then all will be hunky-dory. But
one
it's not.
Thing that I thought was interesting was talking about some of the other media outlets at a commercial and government level, and how a lot of the people on those media outlets seem to talk down to the community. To a degree, they sort of sit up there in an ivory tower and talk down about this is what you should do and this is what we want you to do, whereas community media is, I suppose, just people that are part of the same community as everyone else talking up. But at the same time, that does come with its challenges, doesn't it? You don't have the same protections that someone sitting up in an ivory tower might have.
True, but I think that's also a strength, because the CBA presentation we saw today morning that John Bissett made, I think clearly identifies the fact that the people talking on the radio are people like me as one of the reasons why people are actually listening to the community radio. So I think more tensions there, because I think it's a love-hate kind of thing. You like the fact that these are people like you, and somehow that's aspirational because it means I can be on the radio as well.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's a little bit of nervousness over the fact that these are people like me. So,
it's a double-edged sword there for
it
you.
Is, but isn't everything?
Yes. All right. It's the yin and yang, or what do you say?
We don't use yin and yang. That's the Korean.
Yes, what's the one you use?
I have no idea. We don't have an equivalent for the yin yang, I think.
It's
or
hard
if
to believe.
One, I don't know it.
You don't know it. You didn't go to school that day.
Yeah.
Too busy talking in class.
That's very likely. And I was just talking to someone here at the meeting in terms of the importance of learning civics in school.
Yeah.
As a way to kind of ensure that we elect better individuals to positions of power in our societies. And the gentleman I was talking to said, you know, maybe we need to make it mandatory to learn civics through to high school and put some high passing grade, like 80%, so that people actually have to learn. But I said, you know, but that's beating the point, because the people we often employ to teach civics in our schools, at least that's true of India, I'm not sure how true that is of Australia, are probably the people who actually don't want to do that at all.
Yeah, they're forced into it.
Yes. So I can, speaking for myself, I had a fairly sadistic history and civics teacher who did not give me any love for the democratic process. If I developed it, I developed it later. Yeah. And I don't think she did a great job of actually making me feel that I was part of this large process of electoral participation, or that we were actually being represented by anybody. I didn't feel that. It was just a set of things to learn. So I think we are failing our young people at some level by not giving them a sense of civic engagement and of teaching them what that entire process is about and what representation actually means and what the purpose of democracy is. And also be able to explain some of the warts on democracy. It's not just burnished gold. There are a lot of problems with democracy. Our own former Prime Minister Nehru once said that democracy may not be the best form of government, but it's the best one we have.
Yeah.
And I think that's very true. Warts and all, it's what we've got, and it's probably the fairest of what we've got.
Well,
I know a lot of people would prefer enlightened dictatorship, but those are hard to come by. Those are hard to come by.
Well, we do, I suppose, bring it back to community radio in that regard. It is a mains thing where community radio, for example, we've spoken about before, how we do our election debates, and it's where people can come in and ask questions of their constituents, and their constituents are responsible for them, which we would have always thought is, you know, the underpinning thing of democracy.
Mm.
But it gets quite scary where you're in a regional area and there's no one else doing it except for your community radio station. If your community radio station is not giving you an opportunity to ask those questions, you kind of think, where's the balance in democracy for people in areas where there is no questions?
The other point is, in other areas, people just get elected without actually having to ever speak. So they are only represented in print media, they're quoted, and they've obviously had time to make a carefully considered response. Whereas sometimes when it's live, you do hear things that you otherwise wouldn't get to see in print media. And I just find it amazing, in some of the 151 seats that we have in Australia, the person can get elected without ever having to actually speak and be heard.
Yeah.
Staggering.
So that's very familiar to me. And I strongly understand that, because we don't have electoral debates of that kind really in our system. Though some of the television channels have tried to organize something like that, usually it's a fiasco. I mean, it just doesn't turn into any kind of civilized debate. Right. It becomes a slang, a loud volume slanging match. And typically our news channels have descended into that, not having the funds to be able to actually deploy people in the field at every level to be able to report from the ground. What they've resorted to is just have talking heads in a studio and then eight people on screen just screaming at each other because there's a latency lag as well. So you actually are screaming at something somebody said a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
So it's very peculiar. And some of our anchors on the news shows have now degenerated to just being, you know, completely off their rockers to the level of actively abusing the people they've invited onto their show.
Yes, trying to get some kind of conflict for interest.
Correct, and it stopped being about the news. It's become about controversy. It's about maybe that's true of most of the world now. Mm. I think there are other channels globally which are being accused of the same thing, but I think we are turning it into a fine art.
Yeah. Ahead of the curve on that one. Not one you want to be ahead of the curve.
Yeah, with 400 news channels on television, satellite television, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's quite... We got a shock, didn't we, Mitch, at the amount of TV stations that were on there. And we used to flick through the whole lot of them when we were there. And realistically, there wasn't much difference. There wasn't much difference.
There isn't.
Yeah.
There isn't. The problem is also that the way media structures and ownership has evolved in India, there's a huge lack of transparency. We are actually not very clear who owns what television channel. Mm. Because they're held through a complete web of holding companies and a web of anonymous holdings. And because we don't have serious media ownership laws which force you to declare who your actual ownership is, it means that practically one person through a web of holding companies can own a lot of channels. Mm. So there are rumors that some of the richer individuals in India actually own 60% of all the channels, which might well be true given some of the peculiar stances those channels seem to take in coordination. Mm. So
it's not very transparent.
Opaque, that's putting it mildly.
Yes, that's, but it's also a complicated web then.
It is.
Which feeds into that whole idea of, you know, of having a data glut where you have so much information that to find anything out makes it very difficult, and therefore you've just got to go with it and trust that it's going to work. It's like those 100, you know, sheets you get, do you accept these terms and agreements, that you've got to read in 15 seconds. It's a similar kind of process to that, where you don't know who's in control of the media and you don't know what's going on. And I suppose that's what community radio serves a purpose as. You're guaranteed that it's run by board and, you know, there are people in the station and they're going to be accountable to their local, their federal and their state constituents, and there are regulations around them which prevents them from broadcasting, you know, the facts in a distorted way or the facts in a completely wrong way. So it's... getting back to that point of, you know, when we shift on to social media and things like that, we're unsure of all those things. And, you know, India's a prime example because there's so much of it on that, as you said, on the television stations even. But you can imagine how many people would be having their own web pages and their own social media sites. It would be phenomenal, the number, and trying to regulate that would be an absolute nightmare.
I think because of the sheer numbers of people in India, I think it's become a kind of experiment lab for a lot of, especially online companies. I mean, we're one of the largest markets for Twitter in terms of the sheer number of people on Twitter. So it counts us, I think, in the top three countries in terms of number of people who are subscribing to Twitter. So it's become a battleground of kinds, with governments, political parties deploying a huge army of individuals who are just tweeting coordinated stuff in order to push specific agendas and trends and words to trend. And that's becoming a political force. So it's becoming a very problematic situation where the public conversation is guided by paid trolls who are pushing agendas. And this is being done in a very systematic way at many levels. And it's a very frightening thing when you realize that in the end, the country talks about what a couple of people wanted to talk about.
Very interesting.
Well, where are we at? Where has everyone gone?
Well, they've all disappeared. And Russell over there is holding Susan hostage, I think. But she's about to come over and join us in a minute. Well, we might go to a quick track, and that'll give Ram the chance to take up his comedy section in the afternoon inside, as well as on air. And we'll come back. But it's been fascinating. What do you think is the main thing you'll take away from this trip to Australia?
Probably, as I said, a more nuanced understanding of the fact, and of course, friendships, which I hope we will foster. And it's been great meeting all of you, and it's been great visiting some of the CR stations here. We hope we'll get in a couple in the urban areas by the time we leave, and that will give us something to contrast some of the things we've learned with. And I hope we'll take that back and be able to share it. And so we'd like to return the favor by calling you guys into some of our shows when we do them there. We already interviewed the two of you.
Yeah.
I hope we'll get a couple of more of those in. And I think there's bunches to learn and bunches that you can share directly with some of our community radio stations in India.
Mm.
And I think they'll all benefit by it.
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. We'll take a break and we'll see if we can round up Susan, the keynote speaker from today, to have a chat to us next right here on The Pulse.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.